Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so honored today to have somebody who, she has a lot of stories to tell about her books, but we're going to start today with the third book in her new series, and it is called Dawnlands. I am so happy to welcome Philippa Gregory to Joy on Paper. Hi, Philippa.
Oh, hello. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lovely to be with you.
Well, thank you. And it's just, for me, it's an honor and a joy because I love your work. I moved to England when I was 21 years old from Michigan because I loved England so much and I loved English history. And so you can imagine that how thrilled I get with your books.
That's really lovely. Thank you so much. I'm so glad.
And of course, with your accent, it makes me feel, it just brings all sorts of wonderful memories back. And this new book is just, first of all, the cover. Didn't they do a beautiful job? An amazing cover. Just gorgeous.
It's really lovely, isn't it? Yes, I'm really pleased with it.
And of course, I couldn't even start to list all the things that all of the awards you've won, but you're a New York Times bestselling author, and many of my listeners, I'm sure, have read The Other Boleyn Girl, and which was made into a film. So they know your name. They know that, I am such an enthusiast for anything British. So tell us about this wonderful series. It's so apropos, because it has both a tie-in to the new king and also to Thanksgiving Day here in America, because you have a very interesting character to relate a story here about America.
Absolutely. In previous books in the series, there were two previous ones, starting Tidelands and then Dark Tides. We established that this is a trading family in England. They've got a small wharf on the side of the Thames, and one of the brother of the founding matriarch of the family, Ned, goes to New England to escape the restoration of Charles II because he's an old Cromwellian soldier. So a lot of Dark Tides is set actually in Hadley in Connecticut, and I had the enormous pleasure of visiting there and looking at the countryside and looking at the historic houses in that area, and meeting also with the Poconocop people who took me to their tribal homelands. And I asked them if they would give me permission to research and write about their story. And they were so generous with their time and so keen that their story should be told. They are the nation that greeted the Pilgrim Fathers. It is them who gave turkeys on Thanksgiving Day. It is them who made actually the survival of the colonists possible in the first few years. And of course, it's them who were the victims of the first really terrible colonial war, which we sometimes call now King Philip's War. And my character, Rowan, is a survivor from that war. And Ned, the old Cromwellian soldier, is determined to go home to England because he knows that civil war is coming in England, another civil war. He thinks that the new king, James II, will be driven from the throne by people who don't want a Roman Catholic king. And as he's embarking in Boston Harbor, he sees some slaves being taken to the West Indies, the enslaved Native American people, the Poconocot. And one of them calls out his name, and it's Rowan, who knew him when he was the ferryman at Hadley, and he takes her as his servant to England. And from there, in a sense, the whole discussion about what it is to be free starts, because he's fighting against tyranny and monarchy, and she absolutely recognizes that the cause of English working class people is in many ways her cause, that she too wants to fight against the tyranny of the Stuart family.
Well, I thought this was a wonderful addition to the entire storyline. And you're right, it's important that people remember. Generally speaking, I don't think most Americans even know what tribe it was. But what they did and how they, you know, helped the Pilgrims when they came to the United States is a story that we should know about and appreciate these people.
it's an extraordinary story, and a lot of the tragedy of it comes from the misunderstanding of what we're talking about. So the English colonists wanted to come and claim land and hold legal title to it, and that's what they sometimes captured, sometimes conned, and sometimes paid for. And the Poconocop people didn't understand land as something that could be held by somebody legally. What they understood was the use of land. So they said, yes, it's perfectly fine that you find that you should farm here, but don't let your pigs go into the stream or whatever, don't let your pigs come over on our crops. So they thought that it would be possible to live alongside the colonists, and for the first generation you see this real attempt actually on both sides to live equably together. But the troubles in England and in Europe meant that more and more white people were coming to America, and there was more and more of a demand for land, which the Poconocot couldn't possibly satisfy and live in their traditional way. And, you know, in the winter inland, in the forest, in the summer going down to the sea and using, you know, eating of seafood and the bounty of the sea. And there's a whole, I mean, it's a really tragic collision between two cultures, which I imagine you can see all around the world still today, between the white belief, the colonial belief in ownership, and the first American belief in use and living in a harmonious relationship with the land.
Well, I found Rowan so fascinating. And of course, you have several chapters there that are told from her perspective. And I love this deep sort of dive into Barbados, because so much of it that you wrote about, I didn't know. And I found this entire subject so fascinating.
It was very fascinating to me. I, in a sense, I was forced to go to Barbados.
Oh,
which
that's,
is, I have to say, no hardship.
Yeah. that's
in this century, no hardship.
No.
Because when Ned comes back to England, he's involved in a rebellion against King James II and his wife, Queen Mary of Modena. And his family, Ned's family, takes the royalist side also. So you have this kind of civil war being fought out inside the family as well as in the country. But the punishment for those who are captured after the battle against James II and his wife Mary of Modena was by and large transportation. There were a lot of executions, but there were a lot of transportations as well. And the English government then sent white people as into servitude into Barbados, where they worked alongside enslaved people of African descent. And Rowan gets caught up in this battle and gets sent to Barbados also. So ironically, someone who in our first chapter is rescued from a life of slavery in the Sugar Islands finds herself towards the end of the book enslaved on a Sugar Island. And it's her determination to survive that and the perseverance and the courage that she shows that I found really, really inspiring in the book. It for me, it really lights up that last section set in Barbados.
It definitely does. The nice thing about the whole series is that there are so many wonderful characters in the book, and we get to have a deeper insight into them in this third book. Everybody who's read the book will remember Livia. She's like a rather unforgettable character. And of course, Johnny and everybody, you know, loves Ned. So it's really wonderful the way that you put the stories together and the character development. And the background here, as we're heading now into the coronation of a new king, a king named Charles, I think people will be a little bit intrigued to know what was going on, who the first, you know, the Charles before him was. So that's fascinating. Then, of course, you're also very deeply involved in Sussex. And, of course, that's a subject here that everybody's talking about. So you're at the university or?
Yes, I attended the university. I got my BA from the University of Sussex, and I'm a regent and representative of the university internationally as well, yes.
Yes, because
it's my alma mater.
You know, for Americans who didn't know anything about Sussex, they're interested now, and they are, you know, the minute they see that name, they want to know more. So I think that's also, it's just a perfect timing for this book to come out, I think.
It's funny how timely it is. I mean, of course, when I was writing it, the late Queen was still alive, and Charles has been, who was Prince of Wales and had been Prince of Wales for almost as long as I can remember. I can remember his investiture as Prince of Wales. And now, you know, we have a new Charles on the throne. And, you know, I have to say it's been, you know, in the past a very unlucky name. But, you know, we'll see how England takes this new Charles. Though, of course, they're not Stuarts anymore. No. And the culture of royalty and the population in England is completely different. But a lot of the way that we manage our monarchy and the way we relate to them is set up in these very years. It's the coming of William and Mary at the end of this novel, which establishes a constitutional monarchy, which has survived, you know, 400 years till today.
Who presented you with your CBE? Because, and tell us about that. Was that exciting when you were told that you were being given a CBE? Do you want to explain that to my listeners?
It was tremendously exciting. It's the Order of the Commander of the British Empire, and it's one of the highest orders of a civilian honour that you can get. And I was completely thrilled to be awarded it. And it's one of, I mean, it's particularly touching to me because it's one of the last honours that the Queen gave out. So that was really rather wonderful. I actually was invested by Princess Anne at Windsor Castle. And funnily enough, I was writing about Windsor Castle because the royal family were using Windsor Castle as a home in the novel. So I was both writing about it and thinking about it in 1688 and going into it this very year to get my award. It was extraordinary. It's one of those moments where you kind of pinch yourself when you're not sure what date it is, because Windsor Castle, you know, with the footmen in all of their uniform and the military in their beautiful uniform and Princess Anne in her uniform and the incredible wealth and beauty of the castle, it's literally like stepping back in time. It's quite extraordinary.
Of course, for any British person, it's such an honor. But what I found interesting, you know, when you think about it, when you were a little girl, did you ever imagine that you would get a CBE?
No, of course not. No, when I was a little girl, I never imagined I'd be a historian or I'd be a writer either. I mean, it's just not, you know, when I wanted to be a vet. And my mother wanted me to marry well. So, you know, like, in a sense, to make my own fortune and to have my own career is something that I didn't dream of. And I'm profoundly grateful for the success I've had.
Did that mean you loved horses when you were a little girl?
I loved horses, and you can see my love of animals through all the books. I think there's a beloved animal in almost every story, and certainly there's some great horses in this book, as there are in all of my books. Yes, I'm very, very fond of horses, and I have now a very, very adored red setter called Butter, my dog.
Well, I'm sure Queen Elizabeth would have loved talking to you. I don't know if you ever got a chance to talk to her, but of course, she was great on the history of the royal family. I understand she was really like a walking encyclopedia. Sometimes people don't think about royals reading about the past, but I know that she did. I'm sure she read your books. Anybody who's interested in British history has to read your books. They are just marvelous. My friend Margaret George, one of the first things she said to me when I went to visit her up in Wisconsin, she said, do you want to see my Philippa Gregory collection? Because everybody loves your books.
Yes, Margaret's very, very kind. She's such a great writer herself. And, you know, her research is so strong. I like her books also. We're a mutual admiration society. And, you know, yes, funnily enough, because my books tend to be published in the fall, towards the end of the summer. I always send one to the now Queen Consort. She was then the Duchess Camilla. And she used to read them when she was on holiday in Balmoral. And she always said that she wanted... I changed publication date one year, and she complained to me that she didn't have a book for her Balmoral stay. So, you know, it's quite an honour, really, to know that the royal family enjoy the books also.
Well, the new book is fantastic. I hope everyone will get it. It's just amazing. You know, in these difficult times, somehow going back in time is so relaxing and so refreshing in so many ways. So it's just, I think it's just wonderful that the new book has come out. People get it. As I said, it's very timely, very interesting as it relates to our own Thanksgiving and the people who made it possible. So again, Philippa Gregory, I just want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You are a joy. The new book, of course, is Don Lands. It's available. Oh, and we get to hear, this is from the Fair Mile series. Okay, and in this book, we get to find out why Fair Mile, right?
Absolutely. This is what in England we call gentrification, that what was, as the original family home, a very, very muddy, damp, horrible little cottage. And our heroine from book one returns finally and becomes a squire at the house where once she was a servant.
Well, by the way, when I moved to England, I bought a 400-year-old cottage. So I know what an old cottage is like. I had dry rot and I had wet rot.
Absolutely. I have both dry rot and wet rot in my current house.
Oh,
thank you very much.
Yes, well.
And the builder said to me, what you don't want to do is to stop the draft, because that's what's keeping the house dry.
Yeah. living in England was such a joy for me. And every time I can hear a British accent, I am thrilled. I will be smiling all day. Philippa Gregory, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You are a true joy, and it is just an honor to speak to you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Wow, what an honor, because she is such a terrific author. You just have to read her books. As I said to her, you get lost in her books. You have an entire, just her characters are so alive. After a while, when you start the series, you don't have to start the series. You can start with this book and then go back. And this book is called Donlands, but the first book, which was called Tidelands, when I started reading that book, I think I forgot about everything else. And that was, you know, a time when you needed to not think about anything. And it's just wonderful. And I'm just so honored that she was on today.